Ladies and gentlemen, how we doing? Happy Thursday to you folks. My name is Jimmy Selesky. This is live from the studio, the Daily Edition, recently voted most cringe show on the internet. So congratulations, you found us. Here you go. If you ever wondered what the most cringe show on the internet looks like, stick around. Maybe even subscribe for more cringe content. Throw us a like, ironically, of course. Leave a comment. Tell us, hey, you're cringe. I'll like it, because I'm a nice guy. Folks, we're going to talk about a couple things today. We spent yesterday talking about Andrew Tate and his rise to prominence and our society, the state of our society, that pretty much asked for it, that actually deserves it. Check that episode out. That seems to be gaining some steam yesterday. But today, I want to take a look at, among many things, I want to take a look at the flip side of that coin. We spent all day talking about men, masculinity, manhood. Well, today we're going to talk a little bit about the girls. I've seen various different female chicks that I am friends with on like Instagram and stuff, are posting Caitlin Clark's rookie contract and comparing it to the number one draft pick of last year for the men's NBA, Victor Wembanyama, I think that's how you pronounce it, and how much smaller Caitlin Clark's contract is than his. And we're going to sit down and try to figure out why that may be. It seems to be a mystery. And I think if we try really, really hard, we might be able to get to the bottom of it. We're also going to take a look at this news story that just kind of popped off today. It's not really a big news story. In fact, I looked into it. It's actually kind of and excuse me for sounding like an annoying, typical political pundit, but a nothing burger. That's the first and last time I'll ever say that. But this is pretty much exactly what that is. That is, of course, one of the seated jurors on this Trump trial in Manhattan was just dismissed. I was real excited to look into that, and I was surprised by what I found. So we'll talk about that, and we will also talk about the Kennedy family, the Kennedys, related to Robert F. Kennedy Jr. 12 of his family members have just come out and endorsed Biden. Are you kidding me? So we'll take a look at that as well. So let's dive in. First and foremost, off the bat, let's talk about this Trump trial jury situation. So as I mentioned in the introduction, approximately 17 seconds ago, you may remember, a seated juror was dismissed. So they are in the process of selecting the jury. Due to my high-level deep-diving research, I have concluded that they've selected some of them, and some are still in the process of being selected. This trial, of course, is a criminal trial for the hush money case involving Stormy Daniels, which is an interesting case in and of itself. Because when I first came across this case a while ago, this has been ongoing for a long time. See, a lot of these cases are like civil cases, and so they don't really result in Trump going to jail or anything like that. But a criminal case is not a lawsuit. This is a criminal. They're charging him with, I guess, illegal use of campaign funds for paying off Stormy Daniels as hush money. So the background for that case, of course, being that I guess Trump met her at Mar-a-Lago or some golf course or something a while ago, probably like 20 years ago or something. I don't know. And they banged. Stormy Daniels is a porn star. So she clocked in and banged Trump. And then Trump, and look, did Trump promise her maybe a spot on what was the Apprentice or something like that. Like, I don't know. There's all kinds of discussions. Honestly, the more she explains the story, the more pathetic it sounds. Like, it's one thing you meet Trump on a golf course. You're a porn star, so what the hell? I'll fuck you. It's another thing when you're like, well, he told me he would get me a job on that TV show. It's like, okay, so now you're just openly admitting to just like sleeping with people, sleeping your way to the top. I didn't really quite see the issue with this regardless. So Trump doesn't want that getting out that he slept with this woman. It's not good PR. He pays her, says, hey, you know, I'm going to pay you money so you don't talk about it. That's what she's used to, right? Sex and money go hand in hand for Stormy Daniels. She has once again profited from fucking someone. Have you seen her 1099s? Check her W-2. That is her primary income. So I didn't see the issue. And then it became a question of campaign. Did he use campaign funds to do this? Because this hush money thing happened recently. Hush. The sleeping together thing happened decades ago. But I guess when Trump was running for president was when he decided to pay her off to shut her up because maybe, you know, as all of these types of things tend to go, amazingly enough, much like we mentioned with the Andrew Tate thing yesterday, they all seem to occur oddly. These accusations, not at the time that they happen, but at the time when it would gain the accuser the most opportunity for money, notoriety, and what have you. So it wasn't an issue 20 years ago, whatever went down between Trump and Stormy. But when he was running for president, she saw an opportunity to once again capitalize off of her sex life. And so I would have to imagine that the process went a little something like, oh, you're running for president. You're married with children. It would sure be a shame if I were to tell the public about, you know, our whatever, altercation, interaction, intimate relationship, whatever, our affair, let's say. So that's like blatant blackmail there. She doesn't come off as a good person in this at all. But that's not the problem. This isn't a trial accusing Stormy Daniels of being a gold-digging whore. That case is closed. We already understand this. So she did what she does, which is take advantage of a situation, extort him for hush money. And so he pays her to shut up. I imagine this is what happens when you're rich and promiscuous. So, you know, Donald Trump paid the price for that. I'm not even mad about that, dude. You know what? You're rich. You're banging porn stars. Then you decide to run for president. You're going to have to expect to cough up a few bones for that. All right? It's a parking ticket. It's a speeding ticket. We all understand how this works. But the question is, did he use campaign funds to do so? And the answer is, to me at least, who cares? But the answer to the court is, let's hold this trial directly before the next election. And if you're the judge, Juan, whatever his last name is, he is ordering Trump to have to be in attendance every single day of the trial, which is like a couple months or something like that, like several weeks, more than a month. So the whole situation is just one more. We've given examples in the past of all the various cases and allegations that have been levied against Trump, all conveniently seeming to pile up right now. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that? Like, yeah, we've had like trials and stuff. Trump has never not been being accused of something because he's the worst person ever. It's certainly not because they're hurling every single possible thing they can at him to try to undermine his campaign. That's not it. No, if you're a smart person like you, you know that actually Trump has 96, you know, counts of every possible crime ever being committed because he's actually the most criminal person in the history of the world. And it just so happens that he's running for president. That's a coincidence. And it also just so happens that they hate him. And they are just so happy. They're like, oh, how convenient that this guy that we hate also just happens to have committed all these crimes and rapes and violations of campaign funding and financing and blah, 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 blah. That is so convenient for us, the people who hate him, because now we can fairly charge him with each and every one of these crimes. You know that that's what's really going on. It is most certainly not them making shit up or taking shit out of proportion or conveniently timing it right during the election cycle, trying to drain money out of him, trying to undermine his ability to campaign effectively, removing him from social media and all the above. You know that that's not what's going on. That's what idiots think. Idiots think that. The real critically thinking people know that when you turn on your legacy news channel, CNN, MSNBC, you turn on the Young Turks, the majority report with Sam Cheater, worst audio in the business. You know that when they tell you all the same thing all the time, all regurgitating the narrative, the same narrative that you see on Saturday Night Live, the same narrative you see on every late night talk show, every awards ceremony, the Grammys, the Oscars, the Emmys, every sporting event, that narrative, you know that that's the right narrative. And the people who don't believe what is being shoved down their throat every day, everywhere they go, the people who don't believe that, they're the brainwashed ones. I don't know how people don't get this. Perhaps that was too extended of a sarcastic way of saying, this is obviously all bullshit. However, the juror that was dropped, she was seated, you know. I saw another news story of just like one of the jurors that was like not even selected yet, but just like there to be in the, you know, examination process was released. And that was, it's like, that's not a story. Like, obviously there's gonna be people released from the thing. But this chick was seated and then dismissed, which is strange, I think. So let's check her out. When I first saw this, my initial thought was, you know why. You know why. Because she's going to be super libtard, you know, hates Trump, orange man, Trump, whatever type of, you know, she probably has a bicycle and a bicycle helmet and a mask and stands in front of roads and shit like that, like we saw over the weekend. She's probably one of those types. And it's like, okay, yeah, she should be dismissed. And then I clicked on the video and I got a good look at her, an initial look, and I thought, I was right. I was right. Look at this.
The courthouse. Yeah,
I'm looking at this. I'm thinking, oh, you know, she's just one of those.
Go right ahead.
One of those bitter.
I do. This is.
That's what I'm thinking the whole time. Oh my God, no. She hates Trump. Oh no.
Of age, she was just dismissed as a potential juror. What happened? Why were you dismissed?
Because fuck Trump. Fuck Trump. That's what's going through my head. And then.
Because I couldn't be impartial.
You could be.
What? Something about, as soon as I heard the whatever accent that is, I was like, you're not a crazy upper whatever side. I'm not cool enough to know all the sweet New York neighborhood names. Yeah, dude, I'm from the lower middle central east west side. I'm in Tribeca. It's actually a combination of several different words, but it's New York. You know, we move fast. So we combine it into one word. Did I mention that our water just magically makes pizza and bagels better? You know how like people normally say that like it's an exaggeration to say like, oh, there must be something in the water there. Those guys are good. Well, we're such a arrogant city that we literally believe there's something in the water that makes us better than you. Thanks, New York, for being on brand. Anyway, I thought she was like some just like psycho annoying white woman that was clearly never gonna, you know, give Trump a fair shot. And then I realized, oh, you're just like Moldovan or something. You're not, this isn't what I was thinking. She got dropped for saying herself that she couldn't be impartial. I want her forced back onto the jury. I don't know anything else about her. I don't know why she said she couldn't be impartial. Let's listen to the rest of this, or a little bit more.
When did you realize that this was a trial involving the ex-president of the United States, Donald Trump?
So we were here on Tuesday from 9 a.m.
Yeah.
But we realized that it's about this case on 4 p.m.
New York!
We went into the courtroom and we saw Donald Trump.
Went into the courtroom.
I'm driving it.
Exactly. See Donald Trump.
Yeah, we didn't know before that.
What was your first thought?
I was shocked. I was sitting on the second row, like 6 feet away. And when I realized that Trump is there, I was like, oh, wow. I couldn't believe it.
What about the people around?
She doesn't strike me as someone who hates Trump. She strikes me as like a foreign person, which she is. She did just become a citizen, like, I think she says later in the video. I'll summarize it for you because there's, you know, no need to listen to this whole thing. You get my point, which I don't really have a point other than she's like Transylvanian. I don't really know what my point is in this specific segment, other than the big point, which is the joke of this trial. Beyond everything else I just said about Stormy Daniels and whatever and hush money and blah, blah, blah. It's taking place in Manhattan. Manhattan voted 87% for Biden in the last election. 87%. That means that when you're selecting a jury, and let's just assume that I mean, 87%, that's pretty much 9 in 10 people. It's closer to 9 in 10 than 8 in 10. So we're just going to go ahead and say 9 in 10 people, keep it simple. Let's assume that same ratio exists, not just for the voting population, but for everyone, you know, because there's a lot of people that probably didn't vote that also would have voted Biden over Trump in probably the same proportion. I would imagine that if you're a New Yorker who supports Trump, well, I don't know, that could go either way. Maybe you just know that your vote's not going to count, so you don't even bother going out to the polls. But regardless, let's keep it simple. Manhattan goes 9 in 10 people for Trump for Biden in 2020. That means that when you're selecting a jury, random citizens existing in Manhattan, there is a 90% chance that person you're selecting does not like Trump. Actively voted against Trump. I don't know if it's possible to get a fair trial in Manhattan. I think that's why it's being held in Manhattan. The idea that anyone could be impartial in this case. I couldn't be impartial in this case. Is there anyone in the country who just doesn't have an opinion on Trump? Look, the whole impartiality thing is for like when there's like a random crime in which you don't, it's like you get called to be on the jury and it's like, I don't know this guy, I don't know that guy. I'm not partial to either way. I can sit down and do the thing, whatever. There's no one in the country that doesn't have an opinion on Trump. So how exactly is it even? There's nobody. Find me the guy who you're like, hey, how do you feel about Trump? Who? You know, Donald Trump. Oh, man. Jeez. What did he do? He was the president. Oh, damn. Yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, I think I know who you're talking about. What are they saying he did? Well, there's this whole hush money case. Oh, okay, I'll hear it out. Yeah, I'm down. Yeah, let me know. Give me the facts and figures. I could be totally impartial. I don't care. That guy doesn't exist. The whole thing is a joke. And then we have this Croatian lady who, like, genuinely is just like, oh, I became a citizen like 3 months ago. I saw Trump. I was like, wow, it's Trump. She doesn't love him or hate him that I can tell. She goes on in this video to say, like, she was like, the reporter was like, do you follow this, the story? She's like, oh, I'm too busy. I just follow the headlines. I found out that the case was going to be like 6 weeks and blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh, that's why you said you can't do it. Not because you can't be impartial. That was your get out of jury free card. She said that she couldn't be partial or impartial because she's a newly naturalized immigrant who works her ass off and doesn't have time to take 6 weeks off out of her day, 9 to 5 every day, presiding over a bullshit case. And you know what? I think that the jury should be entirely these people. I think that this is one of the few cases where I want every single person in that jury to be a person who can halfway speak English, moved here like 6 weeks ago, and doesn't really give a shit about the whole presidential election because they're too busy running their family sub shop or their business or working as a contractor or whatever it is that they do, that they're like, how? And then give them a stipend. Pay them for the next 6 weeks, whatever they would make working and more. Double it. I don't care. That's who should be on the jury. Not me. Not a guy who's been mouthing off about political shit for the past 8 years. Not you. Not anyone you know. Because you don't know anyone that doesn't have an opinion on this case already. There's no such thing as impartiality. We should go to Czechoslovakia and grab 13 people who can speak English and say, hey, you're coming with us. You're coming. Get on the plane. You're coming with us. You're going to New York. You're going to sit on this jury and you're going to be impartial. That's what we need to do. And we need to get this lady back on there. It's amazing how that haircut went. If she would have had a normal American accent, with that European accent, I was like, I love you. But anyway, yeah. So I was kind of hoping that, like, it was going to be the former situation where it was just like some, like, nose ring, blue hair chick just be like, yeah, no. Who, like, was trying to pretend she could be partial. Oh, me? No, I can totally be partial. Meanwhile, you know, she hates the dude. But that's not what we got. And therefore, this story means nothing. I apologize for wasting your time. Moving on. In other presidential election news, as I mentioned earlier, the Kennedys have come out and endorsed Biden. You sons of bitches. Let's take a look at this.
Joe Biden's every decision is informed by his love, his wisdom, and his compassion towards those who suffer. That is why we are so happy today to pledge our unwavering support to President Joe Biden and President Kamala Harris. God bless all of you. God bless America. And please welcome President Joe Biden.
Got Kathleen Kennedy Townsend in the back. She was from Maryland or something. Buck tooth ass. Had to make sure she kept that middle name so you knew she was a Kennedy for election purposes. That was the person delivering the speech was Carrie Kennedy. That's Robert. That's RFK's sister. I looked into that because I was like, does she have the same voice thing as RFK? That's obviously an inherent, a genetic thing. That's his younger sister. His younger sister just got up on the stand, apparently with, like I said, like 11 or 12, like a dozen Kennedy family members, came out and endorsed Joe Biden. What was this, today? 2 hours ago, this video. Yeah, today. Why do you have to say anything? I can't imagine that. Like, okay, it's one thing if you don't want to support your brother running for president. You're not going to vote for him. Okay. But why come out and openly endorse Biden? Just say nothing. Just stay quiet. People are going to assume that if you say nothing, you're probably supporting your own brother for president, or your cousin or your nephew or whatever your relationship is. So just be quiet. And even if you want to vote for Biden in private, fine. But to come out and publicly endorse Biden as the Kennedy family when your brother is running against him as an independent in this election, that is just beyond slimy. Remember when I talked about how, you know, rich families always just appear to have this level of like inner division and strife and politics just within the family over money and this property and that thing and this business? When I see stuff like this, I don't envy the Kennedys. Not just because they all seem to die mysteriously. And speaking of that, I will say that her brother, her uncle, John F. Kennedy, JFK. Before there was RFK, there was JFK. You know, RFK has come out and pretty much been openly saying that the CIA killed his father or his uncle, that they were behind the assassination of John F. Kennedy. And many people believe this. Many people have speculated this. There's not really much proof to the contrary. This is one of those things, unlike the moon landing or 9/11 being an inside job or any of the other famous American conspiracies, I feel like the JFK assassination being somewhat of an organized, orchestrated inside job on some level is the most socially accepted conspiracy theory. Very few people will sit there and insist that the way it went down, the way we were told it went down, is exactly how it went down. So this is something that the general public, although still considered a conspiracy theory, has kind, they're like okay with it, you know? Like people are chill about that. They're like, yeah, probably. Alarmingly chill, honestly. The fact that we're just like, yeah, you know, the deep state probably assassinated a democratically elected president to replace him with someone who was going to do their bidding. But whatever, I mean, you know, that was years ago. That couldn't happen now. Remember how we, you know, and looked into that and put all those guys in jail and, you know. Oh, wait, we didn't do that? Oh, okay, well, whatever, anyway. Who cares? New season of whatever's coming out. So we are alarmingly chill with the fact that we all kind of on some level or another are just like, yeah, that probably wasn't one guy. They may be sitting there like, all right, you know what? I'll endorse Biden. I don't really see any other reason to do so. I'm not saying that's what's going on. There probably is a lot of money involved. Definitely money. Which just irks me. It just irks me. What is the amount of money necessary for you to betray your own family? If you're the Kennedys, apparently not much. And I guess that the third possibility is that they're just completely brainwashed, you know, old school Democrat liberals who just think that Robert Kennedy is getting in the way of Biden against Trump. They think that their brother doesn't have a shot to win. and that he's just going to take away votes from Biden, and then Trump's going to win. And they hate Trump so much that they're willing to betray their own brother. And that's the most acceptable, tolerable explanation that I can think of. And I still don't like it. Quit being cowards, Kennedys. Your brother's not. I got mad respect for RFK. I'm interested. Look, he obviously already, I'm sure this isn't news to him. This is not a surprise to him. He's probably well aware, you know, he's spoken about how members of his family don't agree with him. I just can't imagine that personally. Coming out and publicly, you know, making the statement against your own brother. Come on, man. You got to do better than that. That's just embarrassing. It's just embarrassing. But that's what happens when you grow up your entire life in the public eye and all you know is how to present yourself, what's the correct opinion to have, and there's no authenticity whatsoever. She gives this whole 12-minute speech, which I didn't suffer you through. Compassion. Joe Biden leads with compassion and this and that. It's like, no, look, I'm sorry, sweetie, but nobody... That type of rhetoric in 2024, that style of politics is over. For better or for worse, Trump killed that forever. The last real old school presidential election we had was 2012, Barack Obama versus Mitt Romney, the first black president versus the whitest guy in America. And they're both up there saying the most canned, disingenuous, cliche, banal, nothing, empty statements. My fellow Americans, we have to have hope and change and whatever else. And Mitt Romney's like, and I believe in the strength of the American worker and blah, blah, blah. It's like, shut up. 2016 came around. Trump was like, boom, boom, bing, bing, bing. I'm shooting from the hip. And now that was like the first time we'd ever really seen that. And ever since then, now I feel like more and more people, when you see like a old school politician, you're like, what the hell is this guy talking about? Can you like say something cool? Can you do something cool, please? So nobody's buying it when you get up there with your 1960s political speech about compassion and unity and togetherness, and shut up. Go take another check and betray your brother again. You guys are... Sorry. It's pathetic. I can't get over that. Last but not least, folks, I want to talk about, I guess, equal pay for men and women. Equal pay for equal slay. Not that kind of slay. Here is a graphic that I came across that you may find intriguing. So here is a comparison of Caitlin Clark on the left. She's on the left. And Victor Wembanyama, whatever. He's like from France or something. Victor was the 2023 number one NBA draft pick. Caitlin Clark was the 2024 number one draft pick for the women. So Victor received a 4-year, $55 million rookie contract. And that was in 2023, too. So we gotta adjust that for inflation. And y'all think I'm kidding, but inflation did go up 3.5%. So actually, that's more like that. It in 2024 dollars, that would be like a $57 million contract. See, that's a whole other $2 million. 3.5% adds up, folks. I'm not over here kidding around. Caitlin Clark received a $338,000 4-year contract. In Victor's first season, last season, he made $12.2 million. Caitlin, in her rookie year this year, will be receiving $76,535. So significantly less. That's a regular day job, like a person with... People are saying, like, yo, like, that's a good salary. It's more than what I make, you know? But that's like a like $76,000, $77,000. That's like a solid job that you have. It's like, okay, cool. You got a good job. Great. You're making 80 a year. Fine. You know? Now, obviously, I guess people are kind of taken aback because you have this athlete in Caitlin Clark who obviously has revolutionized women's basketball, achieved all these different accolades, broken all these records in NCAA, and then to just go into the salary of just a regular like guy who graduated from University of Maryland and got hooked up with a sweet gig because his dad knew a guy that worked at a law firm. It just kind of seems like less than it should be. And I guess we can try to figure out reasons why. Although I can't seem to think of any. Oh, wait, here's 7,000. Okay, great. Let's think of 7,000 reasons why this is the case. This seems to be, in my opinion, the wage gap myth. It is a myth. It is a myth. You know what that wage gap myth is? Women make like 72 cents for every dollar a man makes. Do you know how that was figured? They just took the average salary of every man and then just took the average salary of every woman and found that men on average make whatever, 30, 40% more than women on average. It was not working the same jobs. It was not working the same hours. It wasn't having the same experience. It was just take every guy who works. How much money does he make on average? Take every woman that works. How much money do they make on average? And boom, if men make more than women, then that clearly means that we're just paying men more for the same work. That's the myth. Men make, women make 72 cents to the dollar for the same work. No. In fact, I don't have the sources here and I'm not going to die on this hill, this particular tidbit, but I'm fairly certain I've heard in the past that actually when you adjust for same level of education, same amount of years of experience, same position at the company, same hours worked, women actually make a little bit more than men when all other things are equal. That's really the only way you can compare something. We do know that women have more college degrees than men. I think it's like 52% or maybe more of college graduates are women. So women are more highly educated than men, in today's world. It seems to me, like when I see people like unironically actually posting this graphic, and this argument is so fundamental in logic that I guess can't comprehend that anyone can see this and be like, that is a crazy point. Let that sink in. Let what sink in? That men's basketball makes more money than women's basketball? Let what sink in? That we just took the average salary of men and the average salary of women and found that men on average make more. And then that is just all the evidence we need to show that women are just being paid less. They're being discriminated against. Any evidence of disparity is immediate evidence of discrimination, is apparently how this works. And I'm looking at it, I'm thinking like, this is like, first of all, just on a baseline level, let's imagine for fun, a world where actually we did just pay women less than men for the same exact work. Woman comes into the office, does the same exact amount of work with the same level of productivity as a man for the same amount of hours. And you can just pay her 72% of what you had to pay that man. Why would any business ever hire a man ever again? Everywhere you went, it would be all women, because every business could just reduce their labor costs by 72% or 28%. Well, all these women are doing exactly what the men are doing. They're working the same amount of hours for the same amount of years, the same level of productivity, and we only have to pay them 72%. Why would we hire a guy when we could hire all women? You might be thinking, no, that's not what... Well, okay, here's an example. Illegal aliens, Mexicans and Guatemalans and Salvadorians and all the people that come to the country, and they're willing to work for cheap. You may have noticed that when you go to a restaurant that requires cheap labor, like dishwashers, cooks, janitors, like painters or whatever, landscaping, all these manual labor jobs that these people are willing to work for less money than your average American citizen would, that's who you see doing the jobs, because they're cheaper. So by them being cheaper, they now dominate that market. That's all you see. You don't walk into, I mean, last time I saw a white guy in the kitchen of like a diner was when I watched Fast Times at Ridgemont High a couple months ago, which is a movie from 1982. Now, I think that's a bad thing that Americans aren't working these, you know, low-income starter jobs anymore. But the point is that if it really were the case that women were just the same level of productivity or more, but you just pay them less, then you'd be pulling up to Home Depot and it wouldn't be Mexicans. It would just be a bunch of women. Just imagine just a big pack of women outside of Home Depot. Hey, Holmes, I'm willing to work for 72% of any man, because apparently that's how it works. All right, you know how to work a power drill? Hop in. All right, yeah, I need you on that. That's obviously not what's going on. So where are we getting this idea that we have both the most discriminatory, sexist business owners ever, but they also at the same time are not smart enough to think of, wait a second, we could just pay women 72% less and we could save all this money? That doesn't happen, because it's not true, okay? So the women's basketball, and I don't, Caitlin Clark hasn't personally said anything about it that I've heard, but it's this whole, why do female athletes make less and blah, blah, blah? Because unfortunately, the money isn't there. Here's some numbers for you. Let's talk numbers. The gross revenue of the NBA last year was like $10 billion. Billion. $10 billion gross revenue. The WNBA gross revenue was $200 million. Usually fluctuates $180 to $200 million. Now, that's gross revenue. That's not net revenue. And they're arguing, it's like, okay, we're not arguing for the same amount of pay. A lot of, Kelsey Plum was on the some podcast and saying, like, I'm not asking to be paid as much as LeBron. That would be crazy. I'm just asking to be paid the same percentage of the thing. So, like, if the players in the men's league make up 20% of the revenue, then the player salaries in the women's league should make up 20% of the revenue as well. It's like, okay, but that's gross revenue. That's before expenses. That's before everything. The net revenue, like the actual profit of the NBA after a season, the men's league was about $3 billion in the most recent financials I had access to. You know what the most recent profit for the WNBA was? As of 2018? In the year 2018, that is, in 2018, negative $10 million. That's right, negative $10 million. In fact, the WNBA as of 2018, which for some reason was the only financials I could see, the WNBA has never had a positive profit season ever. Ever. Okay, you can't even say that the WNBA makes no money. They wish they made no money. They make less than no money. They make negative money. They are fully subsidized by the men's leagues. That's just the truth. So instead of going off of how much money they bring in and whatever in gross revenue, after expenses, everything else, if you want a percentage of the net revenue, female athletes, so you want a percentage of the profit? Well, now you all owe money. Congratulations. You want to get 20% of the net revenue of your league, WNBA players? 20% of negative 10 million? Congratulations. You, as the players, now owe the WNBA as your salary $2 million. What's Caitlin Clark's salary this year? I think it's like negative 16,000. I think she owes the WNBA 16,000 every season. But that's real life. And I'm not, look, I had an entire episode last week talking about this. There's reasons for this, okay? I'm glad that the WNBA exists. But again, there is this idea that there's just people out there who are just sexist for no reason, who just simply do not want to pay women what they deserve. And somehow they've just been getting away with that for God knows how long until, oh, you just figured it out. You just entered two numbers into a calculator and you got to the bottom of something. We had this conversation with the World Cup. Now, the World Cup team thing, the national team, soccer teams, men's and women's, that's actually a more interesting scenario. Because the case for the men's and women's national teams is that in the United States, the women's national team actually had more viewers during the World Cup than the men's team. Because A, no one gives a fuck about soccer, and B, the men's team is not good, and the women's team is. So soccer is not a big sport in this country. So people are really going to pay attention to either team only if they're doing well. And it turns out the women were doing well and are still doing well. So they actually managed to draw more viewership than the men's team. And people are going, why are the women making less than the men? And I had to look into that. And here's what I found. Let's go to the U.S. soccer website itself. And I will read directly from here. Our national teams are represented by two different players associations who separately negotiate collective bargaining agreements on behalf of their teams. The contracts in place are the result of extensive bargaining processes shaped by the priorities of each of these groups of players. During U.S. soccer's last negotiation with the Women's Players Association, they were offered the exact same pay-for-play compensation structure that the men's team operates under, but the Women's Players Association rejected that offer. So let's pause. So the men have what's called a pay-for-play payment structure, which means that when you're on the national team, now here's the thing that you have to understand about soccer, because we are Americans here, we barely understand how it works. There are club teams that would be the equivalent of like the Ravens, the Steelers, the Patriots, like just professional sports teams that play for cities. And that's like where these guys actually play most of their time. If you're on the U.S. national team, the U.S. national team is basically like the American All-Stars. So And the American teams compete against all the other... The American team competes against the Canadian All-Stars and the Mexican All-Stars and the Greek All-Stars, and that's what the World Cup is. So that's all the national teams. But all those players all individually play on their own club teams, and they just get together once every month or so or a couple times a month to play for the national game because they have their own season, where you play games against other countries' national teams, and then they have a season, and they have qualifying, and that's how you qualify for the World Cup and the European Cup and whatever. So these guys' primary income is their club team they're playing for. The national team for men is paid by the game. They're paid like, I don't know, $5,000 per game or something. And then there's other performance fees. you know, bonuses for certain types of wins and performance, whatever, that we'll get into. The women were offered that structure. The women's team, since 2005, declined that structure, or had declined that structure up until recently, which we'll get into. They instead opted for a guaranteed set salary. As opposed to being paid per game, they opted for a guaranteed minimum salary. And the reasons for that make sense. Because, as I mentioned before, the national team play, and therefore pay, for men is very supplemental and secondary to their actual income from playing soccer professionally, which is for whatever team they play for. Like, I play for Chelsea, I play for Real Madrid, I play for DC United, like those teams. And then they play for the national team as well, but most of their money comes from the club teams. The women's club leagues are, as you can imagine, far less lucrative. So women that are playing for these club teams, when they're not playing for the national team, are making far less money. And they found it more beneficial to have certain guarantees of income as opposed to perhaps making more money that's not guaranteed, like the men's team opted for, because the men's team, the men's players, the national players, do not rely on that money from the national team games as much as the women might. So this was a beneficial structure that the Women's Players Association agreed to. They turned it down not once, but twice, as you can see here. They ultimately asked for and agreed to a different compensation model, which provided them with guaranteed pay. Even after the last deal was inked, U.S. Soccer again offered the women's national team the exact same compensation as the men's national team for all U.S. soccer control games. The exact same compensation? I don't know if that means the same structure or the exact same amount of money. I don't know. Either way, the women's national team rejected that as well, in part. That's why when the women's national team sued U.S. Soccer, a judge threw out their claim. Men's national players do not receive any minimum guaranteed salaries, and they get paid only when they play. The women's national team, on the other hand, chose a deal that favored guaranteed contracts with U.S. Soccer, meaning the contracted women's national players have a set salary and benefits. That's health insurance, whatever. They valued the stability offered by guaranteed pay and benefits. Okay. So when we had that whole thing about equal pay for the women's team, people going, well, they do make more. They chose that payment structure. And I don't even think that was a bad decision, because at the time when the women's team wasn't more popular than the men's team, when this original deal was struck years ago, it was beneficial to them to opt out of maybe a higher ceiling and instead opt for a higher floor, a guaranteed minimum salary, whereas the men benefited from having more room for bonuses and things like that. So to me, does that sound okay? So does that sound like an example of, once again, sexism and women are just getting screwed over and we're paying them less for no reason? Or did the Women's Players Association get together and decide that what was best for them was to opt for a certain payment structure that differed from the men's payment structure? Which one sounds more like an accurate description of what I just read to you? Now, there were lawsuits about how apparently the women weren't offered the same performance bonuses, or they weren't told about it, something, whatever. And then obviously there was a lot of frustration when women won the World Cup. I think, 2019 or something? I don't know when it was. Whenever they won, and, you know, all these jerseys are flying off the shelves, but because of the payment structure they had, they weren't really able to reap that much of the benefits of their name, image, and likeness, their NIL. So because they basically took the payment structure that guaranteed a higher floor, a guaranteed minimum, it wound up kind of screwing them over a little bit when they actually did have success, because then they weren't able to reap the full potential of that success that perhaps the men's players would have because they didn't take the guaranteed money and instead took the, you know, it's similar to when you hear about like the Funk Brothers, when you hear about the old Motown records and you listen to songs like My Girl. Bing, 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 bing. I've got sunshine. Like those guys were literally paid like $100 for the day to record these songs. And then that was it. Like all the guys who played the instruments, because they just took the guaranteed money. They didn't accept, they maybe could have negotiated for royalties or residuals and things like that, and they would have made far more money. But that's the structure they agreed to. I don't necessarily take issue with that. That's a fairly different situation, potentially, with that. I don't know why exactly. I just, something tells me there's more to that story. But in terms of this story taking place not that long ago, with full awareness of the upward bounds and the lower bounds of what they could earn, the women's team opted for a certain pay structure. So just recently after this lawsuit, the men's and women's national teams have now entered into a joint agreement, a joint collective bargaining agreement. So now both teams receive identical appearance and performance fees. Women no longer have guaranteed salaries. So women now, like the men, are getting paid for play, which means they stand to make more money, but they don't have any money guaranteed. And also all revenue from broadcasting, marketing, whatever it is shared between the two leagues, the two teams. So they're basically, the women's and men's team are just like one team now. They share the revenue. World Cup bonuses, I'm not going to bother getting into. There's some things there where they split the things unless this or that happens. Who cares? The point is basically the men's and women's teams have now basically merged to share all revenue, get paid the exact same amount. This is how it's supposed to go. You know, you have a situation where the players agreed to certain contracts that were different. The women found a high amount of success in recent years and found that their guaranteed minimum contract agreements that they had previously signed off on were not ideal for the situation they now find themselves in. So they restructured the agreements. And now we have the ones that I just explained. So that's how it goes. That's how it's supposed to go. It's that simple. This whole idea of like purposeful, sinister discrimination, it's literally is. To me, this myth is the easiest, most debunkable, most ridiculous myth. So in regards to Caitlin Clark, it does seem wild that a person with her level of notoriety is making less than $80,000 a year in her rookie year. Mind you, much like the soccer situation, that is a payment structure that the Women's NBA League agreed to, very similarly to the soccer situation. So there are times when a unique situation occurs, like that of Caitlin Clark's, where the payment structure that seems to be working out great for all the other players, for the majority of players that is, maybe not the top tier ones, now all of a sudden looks stupid because now for the first time in years you have a player that's actually known and people are talking about and they're like, wait, she's making this much? And then it seems weird. But for the most part, you don't know any WNBA players. You wouldn't think twice about them making this many dollars. Who cares? So you don't notice. But all the while, this is the payment structure that those athletes that you have no idea about, don't know their names, never heard of them, never watched them, anything, haven't even thought about them until today, they've been doing just fine with that pay. And sure, they're going to go on the news, the more vocal ones, and say they think they should be getting paid more or a higher percentage. Who doesn't think they should get paid more? That's another person I'd like to meet. I'd like to meet the impartial person in America who has no opinion on Donald Trump. And I'd also like to meet the guy who says, honestly, dude, I don't want to be paid any more money than I am right now. In fact, if anything, I wish I was paid less. Those are the two people I want to meet. So, oh my God, but Jim, there are women saying that they think it should be paid more. Oh, you don't say. I think I should get paid more too. Maybe twice as much. Maybe five times as much. Fuck it. 10 times as much. What can I get? The point is, these are agreements based off of what is feasible, what works for the players, and what is doable for the league. And based off the numbers I just described to you, that is the net revenues of the two leagues, the NBA and the WNBA, and the fact that the WNBA has not had a profiting year ever. It sounds to me, not to sound harsh, but it sounds to me like the WNBA players should be happy to be getting paid anything at all. They should be happy they don't owe money. And again, that sounds mean. A lot of you probably just went, geez, Jim, come on. And I know that sounds mean. But objectively speaking, if your league is worth negative money and you make positive money every year, and that positive money that you make every year is more than the average person makes working their job where they don't cost their job negative money in most cases, where their job is actually worth positive money and they still make less than you who works a job making negative money? Maybe a thank you. Maybe thanks, men's NBA, for allowing the WNBA to exist. It's true. And if you still are sitting here going, this guy's a dick, Jim's a dick, he doesn't get it, he just hates women, then I tell you what, I got an idea for you. The WNBA season starts in a couple months. They play literally when the men's season ends or whatever. They play the men's off season. They also play half as many games. They also have less than half the teams. So when we're talking about women's, the NBA regular season for the men is 82 games. The WNBA is 40 games. So less than half the amount of games. There's 30 NBA teams. There's 12 WNBA teams. So those are just another couple numbers you might want to mull over. Oh, wait. They get paid less of a percentage? Oh, but they play less than half of the amount of games? Just another thing to mull over. But again, the season starts in a couple of months. Watch it. Support it. Go out and buy a jersey. Go get some tickets to your local hometown at WNBA game. Take your family. Take your friends. Go there on a date. You heard me. You want to look at me and tell me I'm being crass or cold? Meanwhile, you know that I'm dead right because you're not going to do those things, man or woman. You're not. You know how I know you're not? Because you never have. And maybe that will change. Hopefully that changes. But you don't get to sit here as someone who has never supported WNBA. You got you're a chick and you got your Lamar Jackson jersey, your Mark Andrews, your Travis Kelce jersey. You follow Travis Kelce on Instagram. You've never watched a WNBA game in your life. You don't support those women. If it were up to you, they'd be making $0 a year. If it was coming from your pocket. So you don't get to have the moral high ground in this situation. Accept it for what it is. You want to know the reason why Caitlin Clark doesn't make as much as Victor Wembanyama? Because of you. Because of me. Because of the market. That's how the world works. That's how money works. Okay? So I mean, there you have it. There you have it. Caitlin Clark's base salary, unimpressive. She'll be doing fine. She made something like in the millions and millions of dollars while playing at Iowa with endorsement deals and sponsorships and the like. She'll be fine. Outside of that, folks, I think that's good for a Thirsty Thursday. My name is Jimmy Selesky. This is live from the studio, the Daily Edition. Make sure to check us out every Monday through Friday for this daily show. And on the weekends with your boy Eric Glazer and myself for the LFTS podcast. Until next time, peace.